representatives of APSA, the parliamentary staff, special warm welcome to our new member, Honorable Vusi Makwebu. Honorable Vusi Makwebu has replaced Honorable Elise Van Lingen, who is now the mayor of Goga Municipality in the Eastern Cape. Everybody is welcome. We'll start with the introduction. First, we'll start with the honorable members, the Department of Labor, parliamentary staff, and everybody else. My name is Mandla Isaac Kai. I am the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. Honorable Mapus.
My name is Bimoto Ntebe. I'm part of the committee. Morning. My name is George Mtimunye. I come from Mpumalanga.
Good morning, sir, colleagues, our guests. My name is Ndomo Sekaula. I'm a member of the NCOP representing the Kingdom, KZN.
You are moonlighting.
If you have to specify what the kingdom is, it's not really the kingdom. My name is Jacques Lawson and I represent the Western Cape.
Morning once again. My name is Vusi Makwebu from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Willem Faber and I represent the Northern Cape area. Thank you.
Department of Labor. I've been given a name of the head of delegation, I think Mr. Buyo Mafat. If you can introduce your delegation, or maybe. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I think the delegation will introduce themselves, Chair. My name is Buyo Mafat, the acting Director General. Apology for the Director General who's out of the country.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Greg Schneeman. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Office of the Minister, and I trust that your office would have received the apology from the Minister as well. She's attending a special Cabinet meeting. Thanks.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Sitembe Rechwete, Media Liaison Officer, Minister of Labour.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Malikole Ntleki. I'm representing the Office of the Director General.
Good morning. My name is Tendisile Mkwena from the Department of Labour.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Tendisile Mkwena from the Department of Labour.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Norutano Pikashe, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
My name is Ludwig Sishwane.
Good morning. I'm Nosiphiwe Dunivulu, the committee secretary.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Vanessa Carstens. I'm the Early Careers Lead for Barclays Africa.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Kerry Warren. I'm in the Employment Law Department at APSA, Barclays Africa. Thank you.
And I'm Antoinette Napier. I'm the Skills Development Manager for Barclays Africa, APSA.
My name is Mark Lawson. I'm from the LPP.
Adam Dilene, parliamentary official.
Zolisa Mpana, parliamentary official.
Ismail Hussain, parliamentary monitoring group.
Thank you very much. Last week, I think on the 25th, we had a committee meeting where we were considering the written submissions from the public. We received two submissions. One, we decided that it was not relevant to the issue at hand, the amendment to the UI. We then decided that we should defer it to the relevant committee, that because it was in a form of a petition. We decided to refer it to the Committee on Petitions and Executive Undertaking. We then considered the written submission of APSA group. We dealt with the submission clause by clause, responding to each of the clauses. We finally took a decision that we should send the responses to APSA, but also have an open invitation to them if they still felt that they wanted to come and make oral submission. They were welcome to do so. But it happened that there was a misunderstanding that they were only invited without being informed as what happened to their written submission. So that's why they are here. So they're not aware what the response was with regard to the written submission. I think there was that misunderstanding on the part of the secretary. Now, we have just given them this morning the response, the written response to their submission. But nevertheless, we will still allow them to make their oral submission, and we'll just respond accordingly. But if after having caucused, they feel that they are covered in terms of their responses, that will be fine. But if they still feel strongly that they want to orally make submission, you're welcome to do so. So the head of the delegation will continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for having us here today. We do really appreciate the opportunity to have made these submissions and to be heard today. We think that the bill is a very noble proposal towards curbing unemployment and to making, to lessening the hardship of unemployment regarding learners as well, and dependents if a learner has to find him or herself unemployed. And also, obviously, the aim to retain learners in employment and re-entry into the workplace. So we thank you for this opportunity. Unfortunately, there was this miscommunication, so we've just gone through very quickly your responses. And I'm happy to say that there's only one or two points that we just want to perhaps debate, if you don't mind, or propose to you. Maybe we can just do that, but there are certain items as well that we're happy with the response. There's nothing further that we wish to add. So may I kick off? And then if I could, I do have the two subject matter experts next to me on either side who could perhaps add a little bit more richness to the discussion, if that's okay with you. Thank you very much. Right, so I think the first issue was the amendment to Section 5. I think for us, we were not quite sure where or what obligation would be on the employer regarding the re-entry and the retaining of a learner in the workplace, and what financial obligation, if any, there would be on the employer. It wasn't clear to us, and hence it was the question or the clarity we sought regarding what was the definition of a contributor. We thank you for your response on referring back to the definition section. I think for us the real issue is two things. First of all, currently we do not contribute towards UIF for learners, so it's done through the FDA, and we want to know if that's going to change, what obligations will be placed on the employer to finance any of this.
If I can just add to that, the bill doesn't specifically make provision the way we understand it, in contrast with the Skills Development Act, where our learners are excluded from contributing to UIF and therefore the employers as well. And perhaps the request is to clarify when learners are now part of this UIF or the Unemployment Act, would that then imply the company also contributing together with the learner? Just to give you a practical example, some of these learners earn anything, and it varies from one organization to another, 3,500 to six, sometimes even more, per month stipends. And if they have to contribute 1% of that, it could range from 35 Rand to 60 Rand, and they're very dependent on this money to provide them with transport. And what we have found, a practical implication, these learners, once they start earning a stipend, they fund their families, and they contribute to others' well-being through the stipend. So the amount might seem small, but it does have a big impact in their lives.
Before I allow members, let me straight away ask the department perhaps to, and also our legal service, to respond to this. My father will indicate then who will be responding in your delegation.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issue about low wages, because that's what AFSA is raising, is that the wages that are paid to learners range from 3,000 to 6,000, and 1% of 6,000 would be what, 60 Rand. And because of the low wages, the 60 Rand means a lot to those workers who are learners. We take that, anybody, I mean, but the problem is this, that if you compare the domestic workers who earn 1,800, they are expected to pay unemployment benefit insurance. And I think the most important thing is that I'm sure as bankers they would understand that investment is very good for anybody. The money that they invest in unemployment insurance, the benefit that they will get in the case that they are unemployed, if AFSA is saying the investment is not worth the benefit that they are getting, they would understand. But if they are unemployed, the chances of them getting employment, we know that the period that people spend on employment is getting longer, unemployed is getting longer and longer, and the money then that will be assisting them. And remember also, this is a contract, a fixed-term contract. Learnership is a fixed-term contract. Most of them ranges from 6 months to a year. And after that contract ends, what income are they going to get? And that's the thinking that we expect, we ask AFSA to look at when they look at this. The first issue that we're raising is that it's not different to any other worker from farm workers who are earning far lesser than the rates that you're putting on. But the most important thing is the benefit that they will get through the unemployment payment when their contract for learnership has ended. when they are unemployed, and it's that time that they would need it the most. And that's for us the response that is going to put on the table.
Through the chair, if I can respond, we completely agree with that statement. We just wanted to bring it to your attention that some of these learners, depending on when this bill will be implemented, might be in the middle of a learnership. So whenever this then is proclaimed, then that would impact from that day onwards. And the learnership periods run over generally over a year, so we accept that. And we understand that the domestic workers and farm workers probably earn less than that. And we accept that. I think from, again, a practical consideration, if we can look at how can we facilitate, and I'm not sure if it's through this committee, how do we ensure that the communication through all the channels and all the various learners and learnerships out there are done properly to ensure that they understand what the implications are.
I'm coming back. On this particular, I understand that whatever law that is passed, then there's a process of advocacy, and so that the public is aware of the implications of any law that are passed. Department, can you respond?
Confirm that, Chair, that before the law, remember the law, even if it's passed by Parliament, the President must promulgate the law. And the President, the process of promulgation is a discussion between the department concerned and the President. The President asks a question, is the department ready for the promulgation? And in that process, when we give the President the timelines that are ready, it will include communication, it will include advocates, not only to learners, to all workers, because they need to understand the benefit that they will be getting, the change in benefits, so that there's no misunderstanding about the law. The bill also, remember, includes now the public servants. We've got to communicate with them also that if they will be affected by this, they must expect a reduction in their salary when deductions come on this. That's how the process would end. Also, we think that it's not only the government's responsibility, the employer's responsibility to make sure that they communicate. They know they are better placed to know whether they've got learners or not. And when they know when the law will come into operation, then they'll be able to communicate directly with them, the people concerned in there. And also, trade unions themselves have got to be able to bring them back into the process and make sure that they communicate with their members to ensure that they understand. And I know that learners are unlikely to be members in some situations, but if they are working within the union environment, the union should be able to communicate those issues with them.
Martha Bolt, want to add anything?
Mr. Chair, I think what we also seek guidance on in this regard is from the committee here today is how do we then tie this up to the Skills Development Act, which is currently contrary to what the bill proposes. So the Skills Development Act says they don't have to contribute. And this bill says, and we understand the benefits of them contributing. So how do we influence the change of the Skills Development Act?
I'm coming back to you, Honorable Kaula, having spoken. I just want the department to
In the submission from APSA, this was not the issue raised directly, that the Skills Development Act contradicts the unemployment insurance in this. We'll have to look at it, but we don't think that the Skills Development Act can regulate the issues around unemployment insurance. But the only act that regulates the payment or non-payment is the unemployment insurance, but we'll have to check once a year, check the Skills Development Act. Maybe if APSA can help us, what section of the Act does give that, so that we can go direct to that section without reading the whole Act, which basically you say contradicts this bill. The Act, my understanding is that the Act, in terms of the submission, is that it says specifically that learners should not be paying unemployment insurance. I'm not sure that is possible, but I don't want to make that call without looking at the section itself. If we can get that, we'll look at it now so that we can make that call. But I doubt really that, remember the Skills Development Act came out of the Department of Labor before it went to the higher education. I don't think that the department would have put a clause there that gives the Skills Development Act an authority over Unemployment Act, just like it would not put the Skills Development Act give authority over the BCA and the LRA. That wouldn't do. But we would want to look at it if we can get the exact section that creates that. We don't think there's that, but we'll look at it.
Let me go back now to the member, the Honorable Kaula.
Thank you, Chair. I just need clarity here, Chair, from both APSA and the department. The department is talking of wages, and the APSA chairperson, I need your full attention, chairperson.
Oh, sorry.
The department is talking of wages, Chair, and the APSA is talking of a stipend. I just want clarity on those two, whether when it comes to legal obligations in terms of contribution, whether they mean the same thing. And what is actually in the act? Is it treated as wages or is it a stipend? And what relief is there when it is a stipend? I just need clarity there because I want to be on the same page with them because they are talking in different platforms. Stipend and wages, is it the same when it comes to legal obligations to contribution? I need the clarity, Chair. Thank you very much.
I don't know, maybe now they have the same understanding after the clarification there.
Mr. Chair, if I can respond. Generally, in the learner's terms, when we register learnerships, we specify a stipend. In principle is the same as either a salary or a wage, but the Skills Development Act refers to stipends. So from that perspective, the learners understand the concept of a stipend, but in essence it's the same.
If I can come in, what I need a clarity on is whether in legal terms, when it comes down to contributions, is it treated as the same? That is where the gist of my clarity-seeking question is.
You find out then from the department, both the department and the entity.
It's exactly the same. It's an income the employee get for performing work. And it doesn't matter what you call it. The stipend is an easy way of justifying a lower salary. So that you don't regard it as a salary. You can call it a gift. I'm not paying a salary, I'm giving a gift for performing this. But in terms of the law, it still remains a salary that you must get as you are for.
Chair, now that the deliberation from APSA is raising this issue around the Skills Development Act is a little bit pondering on the Unemployment Insurance Fund Act. I know the legislative process starting from when the bill is crafted to travel all the way, getting certification and input by the state law advisors and the processes of NEDLAC and so on. And last week in our meeting, I think it was Honorable Makua who raised an issue that if the committee can be privy to the NEDLAC report, it will also assist us. And if a bill comes before the committee, perhaps to capture all those processes, what would have been the view of the state law advisors? What would have been the view of parties that are negotiating at NEDLAC? What would be the view of parliamentary legal services on a particular bill, which we many times get orally in the meeting? I therefore needed to make a submission to that for future purposes, it may not be for this particular bill, that we need really to have
that history of a bill traveling all the way up to this far, so that as a committee we can certify ourselves before we can deliberate on a bill and submit it to the House for what we call it, ascension. I don't know what the right way it is for adoption and referral to the President for enactment. I'm not sure if we can unfold that kind of a process so that we are really satisfied. And I also want to emphasize on the point of public consultation or public hearings in as far as a select committee or in as far as the National Council of Provinces is concerned. That is unique or different from that process of the portfolio committee of the National Assembly.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I don't know if there's you want to add anything or you've been clarified absolutely. You're fine.
Okay.
Anything else, Mr.
Khaled? Our understanding is that we look at this case and there's no contradiction between the two. Other than that, the UIF as it stands now excludes 182s that are employed in terms of the Skills Act from UIF contribution. That's what the UIF Act says as it stands. Now, this amendment is deleting that exclusion to make sure that they are treated just like any other worker. And we can't find any contradiction between the two. Therefore, there's nothing that needs to be changed in the Skills Act. And we confirm, we concede on the issue that the member is asking, that the NEDLAC report need to accompany the bills. We will make sure that all the bills that are coming, the NEDLAC report is presented to all both houses for the deliberation of the members.
Thank you very much. And I think that before you, Mr. Mahfoud.
Okay, Chair, I just wanted to also to comment on the issue of the stipend versus the wage. The fourth schedule to the Income Tax Act really defines remuneration. I think it also refers to any remuneration in terms of Section 18.3 of the Skills Development Levies as part of remuneration as well.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to point out, Chair, that the application of this Act clearly specifies where the Act is applicable, and if an employer is employed for less than, if an employee is employed for less than 24 months, then the Act won't be applicable to them. So I don't think there's an issue then with the Skills Development Act and the learnership, because they're saying the learnership is 6 to 12 months, and this Section 3, which is amended by Clause 1 of the bill, says that the Act won't be applicable to anyone who's employed for less than 24 months. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Members, any comments? No. I think let's thank the APSA for coming and make oral submission, and also the department and members for responding to the conference.
Sorry.
Oh, do I have to put 10 months or not? 24 hours, not months.
24 hours. Sorry, Chair, just one or two more other points. Sorry. If I can just look back at the response on where, and I think it just dovetails with the discussion now about the and that was Section 3, where there's been the removal of the exclusion of learnerships, and where it's 3.1, which is general, where it just says it applies to all employers and all employees other than the people working less than 24 hours a month. We just thought, is it not perhaps an idea to include specific reference to learnerships, internships, and apprenticeships in that section, just to make it very, very clear that it applies to those categories of persons as well? That's just our proposal.
I'm trying to look at this document there. On the
So application of this Act 3.1. So where we've got the Act applies to all employers and all employees other than employees employed less than 24 hours per month and the employees. So we would propose that to make it clear to include specific reference to the learnerships, the internships and apprenticeships in that, so it's clear.
We think it's clear enough. We think if you work more than 24 hours a month, the Act applies to you. Now, should we be putting domestic workers? Should we be putting farm workers in there? When domestic workers were included, then we included them in. We never put domestic workers in that section. We just took them away from the exclusion. And if you are not in the exclusion, if there's no exclusion, then the Act applies to you. Where the Act intends to exclude you, the Act will say that. If it does not exclude you, then you're included. And that's the approach that in drafting legislation you take. You don't have to specify the category. So as soon as you specify, then you create other communication that somebody will raise that because we're not specified, then you're not included. And then it becomes an unnecessary litigation issue.
And I would say we take that point.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that includes you? Is there anything else?
Any other?
Apologies. Let me turn over on your. The point of incomplete or unsuccessful learnerships. The concern is that the learnership period is short. So we're not quite sure what the extent of the benefit will be regarding the unemployment insurance claim for incomplete or unsuccessful learnerships. And then following on from that as well, the same point regarding maternity leave learners. If I can hand over to you, Vanessa, just to give some more context there, please.
If you can just bear with me for a minute. Most of these 18-2 learners are unemployed before entering into a working agreement with the employer. So they would not have built up any credits up to that point. Most of them don't. And therefore, if they do go on maternity leave or get any other benefit, the benefit that they get whilst the bill's intent is to alleviate some of the hardship, it is very minimal, and it may not make a big impact in terms of their lives. So there are a couple of things that I just wanted to point out with regards to the maternity leave, to reiterate those. There's a qualifying period of 13 weeks for maternity leave benefits raised, but not to any other benefits such as illness or death. And that in itself appears to be unfair and in conflict and not at the core, which is the right to equality. So I'm not sure if the intent is to only do it for maternity, and maybe there's a very good reason for that. But we understand that currently these learners and or interns don't contribute to benefit, so that would really help them in being able to claim for maternity benefits. What we have found, just a practical implication again, most of these learners, when they do go on maternity leave, they fail to return to complete their learnership. So what it's intended to do is to help them re-enter, but from practical experience, very little of that actually happens. And I assume it's because of the responsibilities that's been added to them and being able to re-enter back into the working place. There's in the UIA, it also provides for a maximum period of leave, of this maternity leave being payable for 17 0.32 weeks. On the other hand, when there's a stillborn child, or in the third trimester, it refers to full maternity benefits. And perhaps just the wording is to be consistent, either maximum period or full benefit. And then I think there's an error because in the amendment it refers to 17 to 32 weeks, and it's probably 17.32 weeks. So if I can just summarize, I think the intent is very good for at least some of these females to be able to claim. However, if you think also around what is happening, there might be adoptions where there would be same-sex partners involved, and then there's no maternity leave necessarily up front because it's a female that now applies for maternity leave. And how would those benefits be extended if there are same-sex partners who've adopted a child? And would that extend to them? And then just in case the benefit of the 66% for maternity leave that they are able to claim, that doesn't extend to the other benefits like death and illness and things like that.
That's us before the response. I just wanted you to deal with
all the concerns that you have with regard to the
problem. So that was the last one.
Yes, sorry. That's the last one. Sorry, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. Honorable Makua.
It's almost like a point of order, but not as strict as we normally look at point of order. It's just in terms of the order of our business, Chair. I think that APSA is not helping themselves by raising new issues that were not in the original submission. Because we have, as a committee, already worked through the submission. And when the new points comes up now, I think it's not fair to expect our legal advisor in the Department of Labor to answer, because the members are appearing before the committee and not before the department. So I just think that it's important, Chair, for that to be noted, that new points that were outside of the original submission were raised in the meeting. I think the points are good, but it would have helped if the points were raised earlier. Then we would have had an opportunity as a committee to work through them properly. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Dikhab.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apology that I arrived late, though it was not just an intention. Your secretary decided to send us to another venue while you are here. So anyhow, because we are here, there's no problem. Even the documents, we're just reviewing them now. But I want to check with APSA. The point that they are raising now of helping the female ones when it comes to re-entering into the internship, I just want to check, why must it be difficult? Because you don't just decide to have a baby. It's a blessing from God. Is APSA saying people must not be blessed with the baby? If they're not saying that, why is it difficult for APSA to help the learners to re-enter back to their bank? Let me just put it like that. And the other issue, are you able to help them after the internship, to help them to get a permanent job?
Let me just clarify that there were, I think, about five issues that were raised by APSA in their written submission. Six. as you correctly say, Honorable Makuwe, we, the committee, responded to those issues. But as I indicated earlier, that there was a miscommunication between the committee and APSA in terms of making them aware of our responses. And therefore, they are here for oral submission. But they are still within those issues, so that they are motivating each one of those points. That there were points that they say they are fine with, but I think now there are three points that they want to elaborate more on. That's why I am giving this chance of the Department of Legal Services to respond. And then we will have a chance as members to deliberate today and next week before we then finalize our report. So I wanted you had so I'll need the legal services and the department to respond on this concern that you're making with regard to the issue of incomplete or unsuccessful learnership. We did deal with that, but the issue of credit. And you understand when do the credit start? So it's an issue that I think must be addressed, and on this issue of the maternity leave.
I think Chair and members, the first thing, I mean, the issue of 13 weeks that the bill indicates that a contributor, not only learners, all contributors can only claim maternity benefit if they've been in employment for 13 weeks. But remember, the chances of an employer first, the chances of an employer employing and not encouraging discrimination, employing somebody and asking somebody who is ready to claim maternity benefits into employment, it's rare. I've never seen it. A new employee coming in who's ready to deliver and claim unemployment insurance. That's the first thing. The second thing is that, remember, in terms of the bill now, unemployment benefits don't come from the credit. You can, maternity benefit don't come from your unemployment benefit. You can claim unemployment maternity benefit now, and then you come back to work, and then you are retrenched, not because you gave birth, because the company is struggling economically. Then you are entitled again to go and claim your unemployment insurance, come up your credit. Now, to ensure that, because the benefit is not paid as credit, that the people that are paying have at least contributed into the fund, and that's where the 13 weeks come in. And it's not intended to disadvantage. It's unlike somebody who's employed today and contribute and die, and then the beneficiary has got to claim benefits, death benefit in terms of the benefit. It's a different situation, and it's not made to discriminate against. It's made to ensure that there at least has been a 13 weeks contribution. And if you look at 13 weeks, it's what 3 months, around about 3 months. And we do not think that is an unfair period. And if you look at many companies' collective agreement, they got the same kind of limitation on when can you claim maternity. Those that have got maternity benefit got the same limitation, and we don't think it's an unfair limitation. On the issue of people completing their contract of learnership, it's the same thing as if you employ me, there's no guarantee that I'll stay forever. I can leave anytime. Now, even if I'm not on a learnership, I'm employed permanently, I can work for 3 months and resign. Nothing prevents me doing that. or I can work for 3 months and be dismissed. And if I'm dismissed, UI will pay me in terms of the credit, because UI, remember, is an insurance. The credit that I've got because of the period that I've paid, I've got paid to that. If I got little credit and it's not cost effective for paying me out, and they, sorry, it's still my money, it remains there. When I get employment somewhere else and they work 5 years there and then claim unemployment, it will include my credit that I've been able to get whilst I was working as a learner or wherever. Therefore, we don't see anything wrong and disadvantageous to learners on this, because, as I said, it's the same thing as a person who's dismissed when they're 3 months or 2 months in the work. When a learner does not finish their learnership, then the employer dismisses them because they've got a contract. They've got a one-year contract. If they don't come back, they are dismissed. Then if they are dismissed, they should be able to claim their unemployment insurance, whatever credit they've got in it. And as soon as you treat them differently, then the issues of discrimination and unfairness will come in. They've got to be treated exactly the same as all other workers who at one time or another leave their employment, whether they've got service or not service.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was also one question about same-sex partnerships who would also like to claim from the maternity benefits. There's a bill currently in the portfolio committee that deals with those issues, because there was a court case that was that found that it's discriminatory to distinguish between same-sex partners who adopt children and actually mothers who give birth to children. So those issues are covered in that particular bill. Thank you.
Maybe you can bring another written submission when we deal with that particular bill.
There's a labor court case that deals with this, and the court has ruled on this issue that if same-sex parents adopt, they are treated the same, they get the same maternity benefit. Therefore, the court has already dealt with the issue. There's court precedent. There's no need to. So it's not an issue at all in the labor market.
Any comments?
Thank you for that. We appreciate your comments and we wholeheartedly agree with what you say. I just want to also reiterate we apologize for the frustration to the committee. Because of the communication that wasn't sent to us, so we do apologize. And just to confirm, as an employer, we value females in our working place. We've won several awards accommodating female in our working context. It's more around the individual, the learner, or the intern, or the apprentice, and the practical implication of the bill on that individual. So it's not around the employer.
Well, thank you very much. We can see the delegation also is women. There's not a single man, but also the CEO. CEO also is a woman, so we appreciate that. I take that, members, the issues that were contained in the written submission and also the oral submission have been thoroughly dealt with. Now, the process will be for members to deliberate on the matters. The aim is to then have a draft report since the bill was tabled in the committee, I think around September or August, if I'm not mistaken, the amendments contained. That will be reflected in the report. Both the written and oral submissions, and we tend to adopt the report next week on the 8th, and then we try and make sure that the whips that are here will ensure that it finds its place in the list of issues that will be considered by the House, hopefully before the end of the year. So that is going to be the process with regard to this amendment bill. Any comments, members? Honorable comments?
I just want to comment on the process, Chair, that maybe we should be dealing with the timelines as to when do we get the draft report tabled before the committee. I want us to discuss based on the draft report as opposed to discussing haphazardly for a lack of a better word. I want to suggest that the discussion be progressive in the sense that discussions be in terms or be based on the draft report of the committee.
The draft will be, I think, ready to be sent to members via their emails, and then it will be then be deliberated in the meeting of the 8th. On the 8th, we will be having a meeting with the IDC, but before that, we will deliberate on the draft report, which would have been sent to members earlier or in advance. And then if we agree, then we will then adopt the report on the 8th. Any comments, members? Okay, I think then we're done with this particular item. Let me take this opportunity to thank APSA for coming to make oral submission. We thank the Department of Labor and our legal services. We will continue with the meeting because we have not exhausted all the items, but we've exhausted this particular item. So we'll release APSA and the Department of Labor. And I know, I'm sure you're going to other questions. So, yeah, also, thank you very much.
Let me make this down here.
Item number 3, which is the consideration of the Gauteng draft oversight report. The report was circulated to members. It was meant to be considered in the Trade and International Relations Select Committee, but due to time constraints, it could not be dealt with. So it is now tabled in this meeting. The point I'm making is that the members have at least now the whole week to look at the report. If there are any amendments, corrections, omissions, you have that opportunity before we adopt the report. Honorable Mabu.
Chairman, I propose that we only deal with amendments and corrections that are substantive in nature. But then also with that, I want to apologize that I have done I've worked through the document and I've done a few changes. Like, for example, Kutuspoort is one word in Pretoria. It's not a Kutuspoort. Those type of minor changes that does not affect in any way the substantive content of the document. But my mail refused to send it, even when I was connected to Wi-Fi this morning. So I will present those changes. I would, with that, say that having been with my honourable member here next to me, leaders of the delegation, we appreciate the work that the staff has done. Although delayed, we are very happy with what we have before us now, Chair, and would at the appropriate moment want to move for the adoption with the proviso that we, if we do pick up, and those need to be submitted to the Secretary by 12 o'clock tomorrow, latest.
Can we have the second for the adoption of the report?
Chair, with the rider, if, with your permission, of course, and indeed I will share the sentiments by Brahid. But there were also commitments, says Grace, in the process of the meeting that we spent in Gauteng, like the report that we undertook that is going to be sent to the committee by Brasa. With such amendments, I agree, Chair, that we must also tap into following up on the commitments that we made then. Thanks.
Thank you very much. The report has been adopted. What is going to happen? I think what we need to do is to have a joint management committee meeting, Honorable Mako, so that we can follow up on the recommendations that are contained in the report for their implementation. Agreed? Thank you. The next item is the tabling of the amended four-term committee program. Has everybody got a copy?
I do not have any input to make to the committee program. But my only concern is that the program, to me, comes after fact, because the program of Parliament is already adopted by the programming committee for the fourth quarter. So whether or not, and it includes this, whether or not we want to make amendments to this particular program of the committee, it would be of no material effect, because already the Parliament program for the fourth quarter is already adopted. Now, for future purposes, I want to suggest that this be done before the entire Parliament program is processed by programming committee and adopted by programming committee. And I think the Secretariat can liaise with who's that guy, Jeremy, so that they get to inform him, so that they know when and how is the Parliament program processed and when is it going to be adopted, so that we make our input. If we were to make input or changes to this program now, it will be of no material impact, because we are now a substructure. We can't change the program already that is adopted by the programming committee.
Honorable Dekhar.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I know you are new in this committee, but I want to assist you in adopting the program as it is. Thank you.
Let me clarify why there's an amendment, Honourable Member. Is that with regard to the UI amendment, we had projected that we would continue with the discussions and deliberations up until the 22nd, if not the 29th of November. But then when we met in the management committee, we realized that with the number of the submission that have been sent to the office, there were only two. One is the one that we referred to the select committee on petitions and executive undertaking. The other one is the one that we just dealt with of APSA. Then that then left us with trying to then manage the program, because it already, if you look at your program, the one that the Honorable Timunyo is talking about, the NCOP program, it will have the dates of the meeting focusing on labor and the UIF. When we're not going to be having those meetings, because the likelihood is that we'll finalize the whole issue of your UI amendment in the meeting of the 8th. It would then it would have left us with the 8th, 7, 6, all the other days that were scheduled for UI would not have anything. So we then became proactive and decided that let's then write to departments and invite them to come and make presentations on their annual report. We decided that we should invite the Economic Development Department, the Small Business Department. But then later on, there's another one. Honorable Makuwe told me, I think, at the WIP, that they're not going to be utilizing the 23rd of November for South African Tourism annual report. That day is left open, that slot, and then we decided then to utilize it for the transport department. But we have made the application. We're still waiting for the response. So I'm trying to clarify why we're having these amendments to this particular program. We know the process is that we're supposed to go to the section that deals with the committee, and then that will then go to the WIPARI and also the program. But of course, we're faced now with the situation where we had to finish the work on UIF earlier than originally scheduled. Agreed? Honorable Lord?
Thank you, Chair. The Department of Transport for the 23rd, have you decided what's the briefing going to be about?
With all the departments, we will be focusing on their annual report.
Some of the, after our visit to Gauteng, there was some issues around transport that we could take up as a committee as well, but then I'm sure we'll take it up in the first quarter of, what's next year, 2017. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine, member. Thank you very much. We'll make sure that when we deal with the strategic review of the committee, we'll take the point that Honorable Leont is raising into account. Thank you very much. Honorable Dikhale moved. Can we have a second? Honorable Timonya. Thank you. The next item. The update on the international study tour.
Yesterday we drafted a letter to be submitted to the Department of International Relations. But the letter was forwarded to the two chairpersons so that they can check if this is what they want on the letter. But they responded this morning to say it is fine, we can submit the letter to the Department of International Relations.
Wow. Sa Ripoto.
The content of the letter, we highlighted the objectives of the study talk, and we requested the...
On the point of order, Chair, there is subjective interest being expressed.
Order, member.
What is contained on the letter is the objectives of the study tour to China. objectives of the study tour to Cuba, and we also requested them to draft a program for the committee based on the objectives of the study tour. And we also requested them to assist us with the three codes on accommodation, ground transport, and also assist us with visa. Thank you.
As soon as we get a feedback from the ambassador, because the procedure is that we communicate with Durko sends it to the ambassador, because the South African embassy there will be our host. And in the formulation of the letter, we are also requesting the embassy to put body to what it is that we'd want to do. So with your permission, Chair, I can just run quickly through it to say that we, for example, doing an oversight of the embassy, we're looking at tourism between South Africa and Cuba. We're also then, in terms of trade and international relations, looking at what has happened up until now. Then we are only in the other select committee, looking at four out of the six departments that's reported to us. Because of time constraints, we can't look at all six committees. So we're looking at infrastructure under economic development, and the main driver is going to be economic development. The second thing that we're looking at is transport. How do they have their transport system there, particularly the public transport system, let's say experiences on that. Then we're looking at labor. What are their labor legislation like, and how do they deal? It's going to be interesting because it's an economic different setup than ours. And then the final one, I would need help. It's labor. Oh, and small business. But we are not using the term small business. We are using the term SMMEs in our letter so that we can also see how they are able to assist small, middle, and medium enterprises. And that's the essence. But the flesh of that would be determined by our embassy in Cuba. Thank you, Chair. I think the date that is in the letter that is proposed, I think it's the 13th to the 21st of January 2017. I didn't see your name, Honorable Kaula, on the list.
No. Can we agree that visitors that are not unannounced?
Is that official?
I think we're done with this, the update. Chair, I think the point that's being raised now about Kaula must be taken seriously. If we did not communicate a name with the embassy in advance, the embassy is not going to make the necessary arrangements for us. So it's going to be important that we find a mechanism through which we can, in fact, get confirmation from members and alternates who wish to be part of the study talk. Our position has always been that if we do oversight, our alternates are welcome to accompany us. But now we have a new member who's not on the list,
and then also we need to hear if Honorable Kaula or any other alternate member wishes to participate. We have to find a way in which we get that information. Time, yes, Lija.
Honorable Lott?
The Honorable Makwe just touched on my matter because Honorable Magwebu is a permanent member and he's going to be a permanent member of this committee as well, so just make sure that that is addressed.
Honorable Kaula?
You just want me to talk to
you know, the names are contained in the letter that is going to be signed by myself and Honorable Makuwe. But once that is signed with the names that are listed there, it's going to be very difficult to add other names.
You want me to say whether I'm in or out?
Yes.
I'm in, I'm here.
So you'll be part of the...
I'm in.
Okay. Okay, so the letter will then have to include the... Honorable Vusi Makwif and the Honorable Kaula. Yeah. Thank you. The next item, which is the last item, is the consideration of and adoption of minutes of the last meeting. We'll go page by page.
Good afternoon, members.
It's the last item on our book test. You're welcome. page one, members. Page two.
Can you just find me?
Page 3, page 4, page 5, and the last page, page 6. Can we have a mover? Honorable Dekhale. Any seconder? Honorable Launch. Thank you very much, members. That was the last item on the agenda. And then the participation.
You need to go. We're taking the time from you. That's cool.